Hello and welcome to the Conduit's podcast series, Service Please. This series will be focusing on ethical and sustainable hospitality, engaging with a diverse range of industry experts and a variety of individuals across different sectors, disciplines, roles, and levels. From supply chains to sourcing, waste management to well-being and welfare, what problems need tackling and what does the future of hospitality look like? I'm Rosie Fletcher, the editorial manager at The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. I'm thrilled that we have partnered with the Brilliant Design Hotels on a four-part series spotlighting some amazing individuals who have created incredible places to stay around the world. For a quarter of a century, design hotels have been at the forefront of a movement in travel by curating a global collection of independent, design-driven hotels that function as social hubs and spaces for purposeful experiences, connection, and curiosity. Today, I'm joined by Veronica Reed from the wonderful Carlotta Hotel in Quito, Ecuador. Welcome, Veronica. So, welcome to the Conduit podcast, Veronica. I'm so thrilled to have you with us today.
Thank you, Rosie. Thank you for having me.
So you have done an amazing job with Carlotta Hotel in Quito, and I would love to hear from you a little bit about your journey to creating such a wonderful destination.
Well, I guess everything started with this unique property that was that belonged to my husband's grandmother. She was an amazing lady. She struggled all her life working to support her family. And among all the things she did, she purchased this house in the 1960s. It's a historical building from the beginning of the century. It kind of like needed some work to be occupiable. So I guess she put all of her resources and all of her effort in providing a home for her family there. And then by the 1990s, or I would say early 2000s, she was well into her 80s or 90s. So she still kept the property, but nobody lived there anymore. The historic district went through this process, the historic district of Quito. It's the largest, most well-preserved historic district in South America. But it goes through this, like, periods in which it used to be mostly for living, but then, of course, gentrification started affecting the area. So then you had a lot of businesses and other more kind of like commercial processes in the area. So people just abandoned the historic district for living. And that kind of like changed the dynamic. So you would see all of these houses that were abandoned through the night. They would only be used in the day for commerce. So she kept her property. And it was in, I think, 2010 that we started thinking, how do we renovate this property? How do we keep this jewel that's in the middle of the historical district? It was built by a French architect. So the building has very particular traits, like early French Republican architecture that's really different from the Spanish construction that you see in the historical district. So we went through this process of analyzing what would be the alternatives, thinking about turning it into an apartment building or something that would bring back life into the area. And then, of course, we decided that the best option would be to turn it into a hotel. And at that time, we went through this complicated ordeal with the city government, the city council. The historical district is, of course, part of the heritage area declared by UNESCO. So you can't touch anything without having approval by the city council and restoring things as if, as they were when the building was originally built. So we went through this awful process, like really long, of having to revert to what the building was and like trying to find blueprints of what were the additions that were done to the building from 1905 until 2010.
Oh my gosh, this sounds so complex.
It was complex, and it took roughly 4 years for us to get everything approved and for us to start construction. And the construction process itself was really complicated because, of course, you have to maintain the structure. You can't touch anything. So it was a matter of reinforcing the load-bearing walls, which were made of earth. So it's just like very difficult structural process went through to reinforce the structure, to make sure, of course, that it was safe for users. And in the process, of course, my office specializes in sustainable design and architecture. We provide a lot of environmental consultancy to other architectural practices and builders on how to build responsibly and how to have the lowest environmental impact. So for us, it was just like natural that we had to include that in the process, and that made it slightly more complicated.
I imagine that would make it much more complicated. Could you give me a sense of how one starts going about, like, how did you begin to think about bringing this property together in a sustainable way from the architectural point of view?
Well, just to begin with, just restoring a building is like the most direct way that you can have a positive impact, because you're not actually building a new structure, bringing new materials that have added carbon and added energy. So just by restoring an existing building, that's, you know, you're halfway through.
I mean, that's interesting though, because I would have actually imagined that whilst that makes logical sense, what about things like insulation or the additional things that you have to do on top of the restoration?
Exactly. That's a good point. And probably if you're in a climate that's like, that has four seasons, that would be a challenge. But still, it's better to actually try to improve the envelope with insulation or whatever techniques you have nowadays available to improve the thermal comfort and conditions of that space than having to build brand new.
Okay.
Just think that you're also starting with a property that's already in a really dense urban area. Mm-hmm. With all the resources next to it, all the services, public transportation. So you're actually just like reusing a plot of land or a space that has all these resources. So you're not incrementing the need for people to travel by car, which is what happens when you have to start a project new. You probably have to find land that's available, affordable, and that's probably in the city outskirts or in areas that are more far from the urban core. So, I mean, when you think about sustainability as a whole, I mean, it makes sense to develop things within the city center, and especially if it's a building that's already there, if you can restore it. In most cases, if you think about buildings and how we won't go through the process of probably demolishing it, that puts a lot of pressure also on waste being generated and, you know, all that transportation of the waste and then having to bring new materials on board. The thing is, here in Ecuador, we don't have seasons. It's like the same weather all year long.
You're very lucky. It is not like that in the UK.
I think I would enjoy the change. but anyway, in Ecuador, we do have that quality that we have the same temperature all year long. It varies on a daily basis. So it's really cold in the morning, and then in Quito, because we're in the highlands, we're about 3,500 meters above sea level. So it's like way up in the Andes. So what happens is that during the morning, it's really cold. The temperature starts to rise until midday and early afternoon, and then at the night, it drops again. But with the historical buildings, the way they were built, the engineers and designers had to adjust to what was there, and they had to solve problems without thinking about further technology. So they designed passive buildings to work.
Tell me a bit more about the way that you go about building the property from the ground up in terms of restoration, if you could go into a little bit more detail on that.
Sure. So everything what had to be respected, like walls, structural components, the facade, of course, the interior courtyards, roof, materials, everything had to be restored to its original design and its original construction. So we went about that process. The first process was actually removing like floor finishes, doors, windows, everything had to be taken down carefully because it had to be transported to craftsmen who would then restore the pieces. So while we did that, we had to kind of like strip the house of every finish that it had so that we could start reinforcing structurally the unit. Of course, we were doing some modifications. I mean, this was like a single family residence, of course, like a large house that had several rooms. It had only one bathroom. I mean, at the time, imagine 1900s, it was this huge bathroom with a iron cast tub and like a particular pieces of, that I think were brought from France. Like the sink was this huge marble sink. So we went through this process of actually recovering those pieces, bringing them out of the structure, and then adding bathrooms that would serve all the different rooms that we were putting up for the hotel design. So the rooms were the same as they were in the original structure. We just had to find a place to fit a bathroom in each room. So that was a challenge, but we could do it, unfortunately, without having much impact. And then once the structure was complete with all the additions that we did internally, once we removed all of the things that had been added to the structure in the 1970s and 1980s, the house went through several users and people that rented the place and used it for different purposes. So there were a lot of additions done to the patios and the courtyards. And we went through this process of clearing everything out and just like recovering what was underneath. So that was a really interesting process, you know, like going through layers of what had been added throughout the years and uncovering the materials that were originally there. And that's how, for example, we came about just leaving the brick walls completely exposed and trying to expose all of the materials that are originally from the house, the wooden beams. There's this construction technique that's called, it's like a Spanish vault. It's the way they actually used to do like roof construction. So they used bricks on top of a wooden truss, and then they would, of course, complete the top slab on top of it. So it's like a construction process that we really wanted to show. And that's something you can see in the hotel. You can see it in the actual floor and the roof. So after this whole structural process, then it was a matter of bringing all those things that we took out, all the finishes, bringing them back into the hotel. So all of the doors and windows are 100% original from the original house. The floor that was already, of course, it was old, so it wasn't smooth and it wasn't regular. Several pieces had been like taken out of different places, so we couldn't use the floor for the whole surface. So what we did is we installed new flooring. But then we used all of that material to create these beautiful panels that are actually the headboards of all of the beds that went into the rooms. We used those panels as well to create the dining room area or the rooftop lounge area, the bar. So all of the material that we used to create new furniture pieces or new finishes was taken from the original materials of the house. So I can say that probably 80% of the house materials or the construction materials that were there actually went back into the construction to be used as finishes.
It's amazing, and it's an amazing example of what can be done. And I think that it's challenging in the hospitality sector and in travel, because there's not always that opportunity to restore. And I wonder if how you would advise other people to go about projects like this, and whether it's even possible to approach building a new hotel in a more sustainable way that isn't restoration like you've been able to do.
I mean, there are a lot of instances in which you could develop a new project, bringing in either materials that have gone through a life cycle, like a prior life cycle. In the US and Europe, it's feasible to find, you know, even components, structural pieces, plumbing fixtures, things that you can recover and reuse. It also depends on the scale of the hotel. I understand, for example, if you're doing a 100-bedroom hotel, it's going to be difficult to find something that you can replicate in the 100 rooms. But then there are always certain things that you can bring into the hotel, like in a particular area in the lobby. There are always materials that are actually produced from either completely recycled materials or repurposed materials. And that's something that you can look into just to make sure that you have the least impact possible. I mean, nowadays you can find carpet materials, vinyl flooring, wood flooring, wallpaper, everything made out of 100% either recycled or repurposed material. Mm-hmm. So that's a way in which, of course, people developing a new property can actually look to ways and find a way to reduce their footprint without having to use 100% virgin materials in the process. I think that's the industry's moving more and more into that consciousness about what's the source of the materials that you're using and finding new solutions into how to reduce that need for raw material extraction. So I think that's, you know, you don't have to do it with a specifically historical piece recovered, but then you can also do it with a material that's gone through that one life cycle before.
So have you seen and noticed a shift in that consciousness towards having a more sustainable approach to hospitality?
Probably in Ecuador, it's starting to gain track. I know that in Europe and in the US and other countries, probably in South America, it's a practice that has been growing in the past decades. I mean, in Europe, of course, leads the way. Of course, with all of these historical areas in different cities, it's part of the code that you have to restore buildings just as it is here. So I understand that, you know, the history of the place also makes people be more conscious about how to respect that and how to have the least impact. By coding, probably, I know the UK, Germany, Spain, France, I know you have to comply with certain things within the code that actually allow for you to use materials that have lower impact, lower embodied energy, lower emission of particles. So I know that it's like per regulation. In the US, it's the same way. It's just that I think it took longer for them to move or to shift from new materials compliant with codes to materials that have a recycled component or a recycled base. And because of industry, I think the US is now, in that area, is actually growing because they have a lot of offer of materials that comply with this. You have, of course, LEED certification and other processes that are actually pushing towards that change in the construction industry. And I think it's the future. I mean, everybody's going to have to start using materials that rely on recycled components or recycled materials instead of like virgin materials. We don't have any other way to go.
No, totally. I completely agree. And I'm interested to hear how you bring your guests on that journey as well, how important it is to share those values and that process that you've been through in creating a sustainable product. How do you give that message to your guests?
I guess it's in the way that you communicate. And with Carlota and with the new property that we just completed, it's about sharing those facts about the property, just making people aware that they're staying in a place that actually, I don't know, produces a certain percent of its energy with the renewable sources. that you have water recycling processes on site so that the water that they use is actually being treated and recirculated so that you reduce your potable water consumption, that the materials that they see there have a history and have a low impact that come from either recycled sources or, you know, or have a history like within the same space, just like being repurposed or reused. So it's just a matter of touching upon all these key features that will make them aware that the impact that they're having is being reduced by being there. You know, that's the difference that you make as a traveler. If you stay in a place that, you know, like a regular hotel that probably is not concerned with where the energy comes from or energy efficiency or water efficiency, you know, you probably have the same experience if you're not aware of what you're contributing to with your stay. But if you have that information beforehand, either an information you can read about the hotel or information that we probably send the guests before arriving, then when they come, they are aware that, you know, they walk through the rooftop and they see solar panels and they know that the energy that they're using is a percentage of it is clean energy. So we have a lower carbon footprint. And then again, so it's just like it probably makes their experience slightly different in the sense that you are contributing to a lower impact than you would be in a different property.
Totally. And I think that that's key as well. I think it's also, you know, when it comes to being more sustainably minded about how we all travel and whether that's even possible, we have to be aware of the messaging and the information that we give out even before people have made the decision of where they're going to stay. And it's that awareness that then will help catalyze that behavioral change.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's more difficult, I would say, in an urban environment because you don't see that much difference. And we tend to isolate where we are and our immediate environment from what's happening further out. So if you're in an urban environment, it's easy not to think about the impact that you're having on natural systems because you don't see them there. So I guess it's more difficult in urban areas. And that's like a contradiction because urban areas are what have the most impact on systems. So actually making guests aware of what the travel industry does or our contribution to all the processes, you know, like in greenhouse gas emissions and carbon emissions and so forth. So it's not about having this gloomy perspective that, okay, the travel industry is having this tremendous impact, so let's not travel. Let's reduce our travel experiences. I don't think that's the way. If you travel less, the less you know about the world, the less you can know about other cultures, the less you can relate to people in other places probably going through hardship. So I think travel actually provides you with this sense of a global community, and it makes you probably more aware of what you're risking by probably not contributing enough in a sustainable way. But I think that's it's our duty, actually, since we are in the core of the travel industry, to just provide the travelers with enough information so that they can make informed choices. It's not that I don't need to travel, it's that I can travel and I can travel more sustainably. So, you know, like finding alternatives. And I think that's something that you can clearly see in projects that are probably in different ecosystems. And that's what's happening with Veolia, with the project that we just opened by the beach. You see the ocean, you see the beach, you see a fragile ecosystem. So then it's more easy to relate to, oh my God, what's the impact I'm having here? If I come to a resort by the beach, what's happening with the wastewater? What's happening with the water that I use to take a shower or to flush the toilet? Where is that going? Is that going to the ocean? Is something happening to the water so that it doesn't have that impact and polluting that ecosystem that I am enjoying? So that's, it actually allows for us to probably go about the sustainability part of our effort more directly, because our guests can actually see the ecosystem that they're impacting. So I think that makes it easier for us to do this communication and for people to be aware in that kind of project and that kind of surrounding.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been incredibly interesting to have a new project that you start with the same values and the same philosophy, but you're in an entirely different environment to what you've been used to. And which principles can you take? What things need to be tweaked and changed? But I love the idea that you have more of an open space to be more visible and more transparent with the work that you're doing. Has that been the case?
Yeah, I mean, it has, because it was a challenge also for us to know that we were taking our impact so to layers to an area that had virtually no, it had like a minor development. So it's just like, are we bringing this in? We are impacting the whole area. What's going to happen with, you know, it's a small property. That's one of the things that we look for, is to have a small footprint. So it's a small property as well with only 10 rooms. So we know that it's like a minor, I'm not talking about like a large development of like 100 rooms or more. It's just like, it's a small project with 10 rooms. But even then, it took us a while to wrap our heads around the idea that, of course, we want to share this wonderful beach and this like fabulous ecosystem with the world. We want people to come and enjoy it. We want people to come and see, you know, the turtles nesting and hatching their eggs. We want people to come and see the whales. We want them to enjoy water sports. But then while we want to share that, how do we measure that impact that we're having? How far are we willing to go for our ecosystem that we love and cherish so much to actually be impacted? And that was a difficult decision for us. I mean, we've had this parcel of land for like 15 years. We went camping to that beach site for like almost every year. So for us, it was just like our home. And in wanting to share that, it was difficult to come to this middle point in which, okay, let's do this, but let's do it in a way that we make sure that we're not having an impact. So it was a challenge for us. And that's, when you talk about transparency, that's exactly what happened. We try to be extremely transparent with ourselves about the impact that we were having. And of course, with our neighbors, most of whom are, you know, friends, longtime friends of ours. So how do we keep this property with the least impact? And that's, we went about, of course, again, these five key areas about how do we work with the surrounding environment? How do we protect the habitat? How do we reduce or have a positive impact in the energy cycle and the water cycle? What did we do with materials? What materials we select to make sure that we don't have to keep on maintaining or renovating or replacing materials in the process? We know the coast is a hard environment for any construction. So just like, how do we select materials that would allow for us the least impact possible, probably modular buildings so that we have the least waste stream within the construction process? How do we make or create environments that are comfortable and do not rely on air conditioning, because that goes in the hand with the energy consumption? So it was this whole process about making that project, you know, be the sum of everything that we envisioned, like trying to share this vision, but at the same time, keeping it to the minimum possible impact. So yeah. It was a challenge, but that's, you know, that's what makes it more, I don't know, for us, it makes it more special. Like,
yeah, I mean, you must feel so sort of satisfied with that work.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Now it's like it just opened this week, I guess. So we're trying
Oh
to
my
see
gosh, wow,
what
this
happens
week.
with
Okay.
our guests and how the property is,
Amazing.
perceived by others. That's going to
Yeah.
be interesting.
And what has been between the two properties, what's been your biggest challenge and what's been your biggest success?
I guess our biggest challenge has been I would have to say with Carlota, keeping up to date and kind of making sure that the systems and everything that we introduced in the hotel, the materials, finishes, the sign, everything stays in good functioning, and that everything is working properly and having that efficiency that we thought about to begin with. So as years go by, technology improves, and you have new ways of or new technologies that are more efficient, that work better. So it's been challenging to actually keep those systems updated, trying to figure out a way, okay, we had this impact in, I don't know, 2016 when it was recently opened. Now it's like 6 years from that. What can we do to remain active in our search for having the least impact? So going into processes that go again through overseeing the on-site PV production system and seeing how can we modify the batteries or change this portion of the system that would make it, more efficient. So I think that's, and I think that happens with any property, maintaining and keeping it up to date, I think that has been the biggest challenge.
Yeah, totally. I mean, keeping up to date with anything these days is a challenge. And your biggest success?
I wouldn't know yet. It's
What do
something
you hope it
that
to be?
I would hope for. I mean, I would measure our biggest success and actually leading the way or trying to mark a certain path in which others might want to go. In our case, for example, in Carlota, like I said, it's in an urban environment. It's very difficult because people don't see the actual impact and don't perceive it. But for example, for us, our biggest success with Eolia, with the beach project, would be for other areas that are around us that are still undeveloped to develop in the same way. I mean, sustainably conscious about their impact. I mean, for me, that would be our biggest success, to actually have people impacted by the way we do things so that they would try to replicate certain things that work and that would allow for our ecosystem to be maintained. That would be I guess the biggest impact that we could have.
I think you're already doing that. I think that's a nice note to sort of bring the conversation to a close. But I normally end with a bit of a quick fire round. So I hope that you're up for that. I've got a few questions. Answers can be brief. What does hospitality mean to you?
It means sharing experiences, sharing a way of life, I guess.
What would be your desert island dish?
Rice and fish with lots of lemon and salt.
Oh, yum. I think you probably have access to some really delicious fish on the coast there.
And rice is
Yeah.
also like the main produce, I guess, in our coast. So yeah, but that's simple, just like that. Delicious.
Very nice. And I was going to ask, what is your season of choice? But you don't have seasons in Ecuador.
We don't have seasons. Like any season, it happens here that we do. The only difference in the year is that you actually get a lot of rain or it's dry. So it's in the coast, for example, when it's dry, we have a lot of wind. So you can do kite surfing, you can do wing foil, different sports with wind. So that's amazing. And that's a thing that we enjoy. But then during the rainy season, you don't have wind, but then you have amazing waves, so you can actually go surfing. So it's like every, in our case, it's just like you have a win-win situation all year long. even in Quito, it's like it's either sunny in the highlands or it might rain, but that, you know, it's a perfect weather also when it rains for you to stay cozy inside and enjoy the site in a different way. So it's like,
we love a win-win situation.
Yeah.
What is your favorite restaurant?
My favorite restaurant. Oh my God, that's, I wouldn't know. I actually love to eat and I love trying new things and different foods. So I don't have like a favorite restaurant. I enjoy going about several restaurants.
Trying everywhere. Yeah, I like that answer. Could you give me three words to describe what the future of hospitality holds?
Challenge, impact, and awareness.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Veronica. I really appreciate all of your time. It's a fascinating discussion.
Thank you, Rosie, for having me. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Please, the ethical hospitality podcast from The Conduit. Please do subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcasting platforms. For more information about Design Hotels and Carlotta Hotel, please visit their website. And for more information about The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.